This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.
Welcome to Postcard from Potbread, boys and girls. How the devil are you? Hope you've had a good week since last week. We've had an awful lot of fun and an awful lot of computing problems, which will come out, I am so sure, during the programme. Such is life. It's me, Eric Wiltshire, at the base of the Tatry Mountains, very close to Hungary, and we'll be talking about that in a moment. We'll also be dropping somebody in the car in Paris in a second. Well, I'll tell you why shortly. But first of all, let's go across to my good old buddy who's on the zit of the nose of Europe, formerly known as Great Britain. It is the ever stressed out Lee G. Banks.
I think I'm going to have a nervous breakdown. I can't cope. I've had enough. Yeah, my young lady's standing there. She knows we've just started. She's standing there waving at me saying, do I want a cup of tea? No, I want a power supply that works.
Lee's had computing problems. And on the day that Boris Johnson makes the best gaffe possible,
good on you, Boris.
and starts to attack French people, let's just tell everybody on the planet that there's a man from England now living in Paris, namely the co-founder of the consumer action group, Mark Gander.
Yes, hello there. From Paris.
Yes, from Paris. That's France, isn't it?
It is, actually. There are other Parises, but this particular one is from France.
Oh, I'm loving all this. And he brings us a story.
I think there's Paris, Texas, isn't there?
I think there is.
I just said that, yeah.
Lee, I think...
Oh, right, sorry.
Lee, can you turn your volume up a bit? You're a bit quiet, dear.
Right up. Can you hear me?
No, not properly. You have to talk into your microphone a little bit.
I'm
turning
this volume up as well.
That'll do. Beautiful. Well, stop. Ladies and gentlemen, Lee has had the computing week from hell, basically because he's buying cheap power supplies. They keep going pop all the time. I think, are we at three or four this week, Lee?
This is the fourth one. And I have to say that I'm not going out buying cheap ones. I'm buying the ones that are the only ones available. And three of them are packed up during the week. Honestly.
All right. Well,
now, the best computer doesn't even work. It's there looking at me.
Shh. Let's say hello to the guys over in Texas at Talk Radio. Nice to have you with us. Hi to the guys in Luxembourg at Replay. And, of course, the wonderful people on RTI Audio Boo and those finding us on CAG as well. Birthdays this week, we've got Adnan Hamzik from Bratislava. He's 35. Clive Roberts from Milton Keynes is celebrating, as is Alan Jarvie. Paul Bedford sends us a message saying, thank you for the birthday wishes last week. You're welcome, Paul. Jeff Ruderham writes, I haven't spoken to you for years, Eric. That's quite common, really, Jeff. Were you ever forgiven for chopping down the cherry tree almost 20 years ago? No. I see where this is going. He's after a shameless plug. Jeff apparently now has a daily show on the community station, Black Diamond FM, which, if I'm right, is in Scotland, which streams online at www.blackdiamondfm.com. Not .com, Jeff. .com with a m.
I hope not.
Yeah, exactly. Join me sometime, as they say. And if you're in the neighbourhood, drop by. I'm a couple of thousand kilometres away, Jeff. If you ever come here on holiday, no problems. And he finishes by saying, would love to finally meet the man behind the voice. So would I, actually. If you know anybody with a good voice, I'd love to meet him. Hello to Ricky Burkett, Rossman Pace in Malta, and a special thank you to Elaine, who reads my new online daily newspaper every day and clicks on the like button as well. Thank you, Elaine. Have you got...
I've got one here.
Yes.
This is the only message I've got, and I hate it because all my messages are jammed up in my new computer, but the only one I've got is one that massages Eric's ego.
Uh-oh.
As you know, in a previous life, I was an antiques dealer, and because I've been doing my house up, I've been going to antiques fairs and sales. And I met a young lady called Georgina.
Right.
Yes?
Yes.
I spoke to her, talking, and I asked her for a flagpole. I said, can you get me a flagpole? She said, you can get me anything you want, duck. So she said, why do you want a flagpole? I said, because I'm going to fly an RTI.fm flag on top of my house.
Yes.
She said, what's that? She said, it's a radio station. She said, is it a pirate radio station? I said, no. She said, I used to listen to the pirate radio stations. I said, do you know where it will? She said, God, yes, I used to listen to it. I couldn't believe it.
Has he calmed down, Mark?
I was waiting for him to stop. That's a pretty small world, though, isn't it? That's pretty good, I must say.
Yeah, that's not so bad.
It's a small world for you, but it's too big for me.
Oh, my word. Oh, dear. Stop going away from your microphone on the old computer. You are not sounding so clever, Mr. Bates. Anyway, serious moment for a second, guys. Really serious for a moment. As probably some of you won't know, that Slovakia borders Hungary. The two republics are next door to each other. I'm sure on your television screens you will have seen the incredibly damaging red torrents going through Hungary, a sludge of them. Then the whole thing started with a leak from a plant in Hungary. Now, the good news for Slovakia, of course, is we're upstream of it, but it does go through Bratislava downstream. And there's this sort of horrible sludge that's gone through. It's killed people. There's over 100 injured. There are other people missing now. And downstream from Hungary, there's places like Croatia, Serbia and Romania. They're all looking at what's going on. People are testing the water in Romania. I saw those on the Slovak TV this morning. But so far, nothing's gone terribly wrong. So we may be lucky. I've also been talking to a television channel in Budapest this morning. And what they told me was that the attempts to stem the flow into the Danube have done incredibly well. What they are very concerned about right now is the fact that, like the UK, it's getting quite warm here. And as this sort of sludge turns into dust and goes into the air could be the really critical issue for people in the not-too-distant future, especially those like me with asthma. It's really a terrible... A lot of people that have been taken to hospital have got breathing problems. And so we just want to, from Radio Tatras International, wish everybody working on the disaster relief in Hungary and neighbouring countries all the very best. We hope it goes well for you. And we seriously hope that those that are missing are found suitably well. And it's the next few hours that are going to be critical for the whole clean operation. So good luck, guys, and I hope it works well for you.
The bad thing about it, you know the reason it's red.
Right.
It's because the sludge is actually filled with rust.
Yes,
and
I know.
That's what's through it, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's the aluminium byproducts.
I know.
This is absolutely one of the most toxic things that's ever happened. Yeah, it's worse, in a way, than what happened with the oil rig. It's absolutely terrifying.
And the thing is that
I thought it was the aluminium that was red, actually. I think it's bauxite or something or other. But, I mean, whatever it is, it's just not healthy at all.
Yeah. It's not healthy at all, but it's actually what's happening is it's oxidising and turning to rust, and that's what's causing
it. And the trouble is, we just use this metal object in everyday life. And, you know, you want to buy it for, like, 50p in or 50 cents, depending on where you live. And we just use this stuff up like it's going out of fashion. And look what happens to it when it goes slightly wrong. I think we should use less aluminium foil.
Of course we should. Let me tell you a quick story about the chemicals that affect this world. This is something else that happened to us this week. We were painting one of the rooms. Mm-hmm. Had the fires on because it was cold. And all of a sudden I noticed Andrea actually passed out. Well, I'm thinking, well, she's only had a glass of wine. And what it was, the heat had set the chemicals off in the paint, and we were both about to die.
Oh, my word.
This world doing to us?
I don't know. Actually, you just give me sort of a bright idea, because unlike the UK, I don't know if it's like it in France, Mark, but, you know, we as Brits are used to having gravy with everything.
In France, they prefer to call it sauce.
Okay.
Gravy is a bit downmarket.
Is it?
I must say, I think it tastes better when it's gravy.
Yeah. And of course,
why do all French people talk like donkeys?
We're going to come to that in a minute, I'm sure. Anyway, and I don't know if this is good for the environment or bad for the environment, but apparently there's these, and I looked at it, there's this bag in the oven. It's plastic, and it's like acting like aluminium foil and cooking these spare ribs, which produce gravy, obviously. And it, of course, the whole thing all goes together and fuses beautifully. You get lovely gravy, like English gravy. But it wasn't an Alcan foil. And I thought, that's clever. A plastic in the oven. And it seems to work. I was lost.
Dangerous. Where'd you get rid of it?
What
do you do with it when you've got your gravy?
Well, you put it in the rubbish bin. The rubbish man takes it away.
Well, that's it. There was a, there was
end
a
of piece. Story.
Yes.
there was something on the radio yesterday. I can't remember where it was. Guatemala, I think it is.
Uh-huh.
Out in the sea, there is an island, believe this, Mark, bigger than France, of discarded plastic waste. An island in the ocean bigger than France.
No, unbelievable.
Mate, was it just floating there?
Yeah, just floating there. It comes out of the sewers, it comes out of everything, out of the dumps and everything, and it floats into the sea, and it all gathers like a little island. Well, why don't we plant palm trees on it and things like that? Make it lovely.
Stop it, we're going to sound like ego bashers in a minute. We've got to say hi to Martin Ward, who complimented us on last week's show, guys, saying, hope you're all well. Great show last week again. Gosh.
Oh, he's lovely, isn't he, old Martin?
We love him. And Martin also reported to us that a Liverpool business was shocked to receive an electricity bill for more than £60,000. That's about 70,000 euros, or over $100,000. It follows a story on Granada Reports, which is a television news service in the north of England, about a shopkeeper in Southport who also had a bill for over £30,000. Now, I thought we should debate this, boys, you see, because I think Mark will have one view on what you should do with large bills, and I'm pretty convinced that Lee will have a different view on the way you handle oversized bills.
Yeah, let's do it. Come on, Mark. Right. What would you do with
in
an
the blue corner?
Exactly.
Ding, ding. Well, I mean, bills like this just seem to be absolutely shocking. Presumably he's complaining about it because it's not in keeping with his normal bills that he's had over a period of years.
I'm sure.
And I have to say that
I think you don't very often get a £60,000 electricity bill, Mark.
No, I didn't have one this quarter, I must say. But, I have to say that, on the Consumer Action Group website, plug, we get a lot of these kind of stories from ordinary individuals.
Yeah, I was waiting for that one as well. Thank you. Oh, my word. I know what it is. Tony Blackburn's back on Big Time Radio and everybody's got his joke book out again.
Yes.
Is that Tony Blackburn? No, I'm just stressed. I'm on the edge of throwing myself off the aeroplane seat.
Mark, carry on, please. Please.
Well, what I was going to say was that people seem to get sort of very huge bills out of the blue. I mean, I think we looked a bit about this last week. People get very shocked and they're not quite certain what to do about it, really. And I think it poses a real problem because these companies who put these bills in, generally speaking, stick their heels in and they're very, very difficult to argue with.
Mm. Can you not complain to something? What is it called? Ofgen, isn't it?
Well, yeah. There used to be a regulator. In fact, they used to have a whole load of regulators. You had Ofgen for the power generators, I think, and Ofcom for the telephones and this sort of thing.
Ofwat for water.
And Ofwat for water. And you could go directly to them, and that was really handy. And, in fact, I've had dealings with them one or two times. You could actually get on the phone to them, and these people sometimes were able to phone the company directly, and things could get sorted in 24 hours. I'm sure it's not always like that, but it was pretty good. And now it's all been assimilated into something new that's been invented, I think, by the OFT, called Consumer Direct. And I have to say that they're like a jack of all trades now. I think really it was an excuse to reduce funding, to reduce, the cost of it all. As you know, we know this familiar story so well.
Yep.
And the things that I hear about Consumer Direct are, really not very encouraging at all.
So what could a listener do if they got a horrendous bill? What would be your first advice?
Well, I think the first thing you've got to do is you've got to start finding out whether it refers to an estimated reading on a meter or a meter reading that was actually taken by the company.
Yep.
I think you immediately have to assemble a lot of evidence about your electricity usage going as far back as possible, over the last year, two years, 3 years. If it's substantially different, so for instance, if you're normally getting, say, 300 quid a year, I mean, I'm talking about individuals here, and they're, 300 quid a quarter, and then one day, for no apparent reason, you suddenly get 1,000 quid for the quarter or 2,000 quid for the quarter, especially maybe it's in a summer month, then I think that you've got a basis for argument, and it's going to be very difficult.
And I think the other thing I'm going to add at that point is to put everything in writing.
Well, I think you have to put everything in.
We're making this a bit complicated here. If you get a bill for £60,000, the simplest thing, the way to handle it, is just not pay it.
Well,
it's as simple as that. Because if they took you to court for a £60,000 bill, then they're going to look stupid. Really, genuinely, the best thing to do with a bill like that, just ignore it.
But then you'll get cut off.
I'm going to cut you off and have to put you back on.
Yeah.
I handle these sort of things, as Eric knows, very simply, very straightforwardly, and I have no reason not to tell anybody about it. Don't phone the call centres. Don't phone some kid who works in India about it. Call the boss. Whoever the boss of the company is, call them. Call the his PA.
Yeah.
And tell her what the problem is, and tell them you're going to go to the press, and it will be sorted out within seconds. People get too complicated about things like this. Oh, we've got to go. We'll have to write letters. We'll have to get a solicitor. We'll have to tell the Queen. No! Tell the boss of the company.
Listen, I can tell you, I think Lee's absolutely right. I mean, if you can get through to those kind of people, then they're the kind of people who solve it.
Yeah.
But I have to say that I'm afraid the whole thing is fronted by customer service departments. And my feeling is that their entire job is to block access to management. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, management have no idea what's going on or how their company is being run at that level. You know, I mean, we've just seen a huge, very damning report from the FSA, who've criticised, for instance, banks management. Of taking no interest in complaints and customer service, and I think that's the same all the way. I agree with Lee. I don't think you should pay the bill, but of course we're not talking here about people who are being charged £60,000. We're all talking most of the time about ordinary individuals who may be being charged £1,000 or a couple of thousand instead of a few hundred. And these people are scared, and these people don't know what to do, and these people don't know how to fight their corner, and it's very difficult for them.
Yeah, I agree.
It is difficult, but the fact is also, the other thing that really annoys me, but it's like you say, Mark, you're saying go down the call centre route. I'm saying don't go down the call centre route.
Hang on, I've got a compromise. I've got a compromise for the pair of you. I've got an idea. I have an idea. If any of our listeners, or if you know a friend who has this sort of problem, please email studio@rti.fm with your problem, and then we'll take it on. Ha ha!
I agree with you. And yes, let's take it on in two different ways. Let's go down the traditional route of sorting it out. Right, and then let's go down the Lee Banks route of sorting it out.
I'll tell you what.
And see who gets there first.
I'll tell you what happens.
Let me just say that I'm going to agree with Lee again that the traditional route doesn't sort it out. And in fact, the only way is not to pay and then to wait till they sue you. But of course, you've got the problem of dealing with a lot of unpleasantness on the way. People who want to live their ordinary lives don't want debt collectors and threatening letters and bailiffs and court documents that suddenly appear when, in fact, you've never had any prior notice. Because this is the way the game is played by these companies.
Yeah, I know.
And it's very nasty. They don't play straight. Yeah.
I challenge you here and now. The first complaint we get, you go down the normal route that you would go down, whether it's traditional or not, and let's see who gets there first. If you phone up a consumer, a customer services, right, and ask them generally, I've done this with everybody from BT down to the electric companies, everybody. Ask them who the boss is, and you know what? The call centre will tell you categorically, I don't know. Ask them for the press office to say we don't have one. Of course you have one. The way you get the number, the name and the number of the boss of the company, the chairman, the president, whoever you want, go for the biggest you can get because you can only fall down the line then. Mm-hmm. And fall down the line, everybody in the company sees who you are and what your complaint is. Get it off the internet. It's one of the few things that the internet can do for you.
Right, and if you are nervous, boys and girls, in all sincerity, please, if you have a problem like that, get in touch with
us.
Tell us, studio@rti.fm, and we will fight your corner for you. And with three heavyweights with respect to the weight of the other two... with three heavyweights behind you who have played this game for donkey's years, we'll take them on because we love our good fight.
Yeah.
This story is so hot off the presses, boys and girls, it's burning. And these two are going to laugh at me and I don't care. Who fans, the date is coming now! Released hours before we put this programme together, Doctor Who fans will be excited to learn the highly anticipated video game based on Doctor Who. With the lovely, lovely, lovely assistants, I'll put it that way, will be out.
Amy Pondlight.
I knew he was going to do that. That's what I wasn't going to say. And the gorgeous companion, Amy Pond, is coming out on the 12th of November this year. If you go to our schedule page, you'll be able to see the nice pictures of the Doctor Who for the Nintendo DS and for the Wii as well. Amazing thing coming up. It's just going to be absolutely stormy, I know. And don't forget, earlier in September, Lee promised me when the screwdriver from Doctor Who comes out, he's going to buy me one for Christmas.
I'm going to get you a screwdriver, yes. That's like a chauffeur taking you somewhere you shouldn't go, isn't it?
Absolutely. This is just, I just can't believe it. The Russian spy that was deported from the US recently has made an unexpected public appearance at the Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. Namely, well, the American name of Anna Chapman. She watched the latest Soyuz mission take off with both US and two Russian cosmonauts going on. How did that happen? That was
bizarre. It's absolutely, it's like the Cold War all over again. They marched her out because it was a joint venture between Russia and America, and they marched her out, almost rubbing America's nose in it. It's incredible.
Yeah, she's a trophy, isn't she? I mean,
yeah.
That's actually. But the thing you've got to remember, Russia, as much as they don't really say anything, are not very pleased about what's going on in Afghanistan.
Well, that's true.
And that's where you start to see this almost this slight Cold War element.
And Miss Chapman also hit the presses recently for somewhat raunchy photos on a well-known social networking site.
Which one is that? I want to see them.
No, but all I can tell you is they are slightly raunchy.
You naughty, Derek.
This is a shock to me. I just couldn't believe this when it came out. The famous Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, MGM, the film, it's going bust. And it's going bust under Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which I get really confused with, Mark.
Well, as far as I know, that Chapter 11 bankruptcy allows you to go keep on trading. Normally speaking, you'd have to stop trading immediately.
Right.
But I think Chapter 11 bankruptcy, because this is an American system, basically allows, to a certain extent, I think, your liability to be frozen while you can continue trading, probably under some kind of very strict supervision, in order to try and sort of regroup and basically save the company. And then hopefully, of course, save the interests of the owners and the creditors of the company.
Lee, you're the film expert. Come on, what was the most famous film from MGM then?
Well, actually, you see, the tragedy of this is
Tom and Jerry.
Of course,
yeah, it was. Yeah. But this is the golden age of Hollywood, which is has suddenly collapsed because of this. Yeah. The most famous film MGM ever made actually was Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and they had the stars they had on the books were Clark Gable, Joan Crawford.
All old people then?
Well, of course they're all old people. It's a golden age of Hollywood. 1930s. You're not going to still be 16 and call Clark Gable, are you? Particularly when you're dead.
Well, so basically what MGM should have done is got into games and all the other things like all the other TV and film companies have done, and they'd be still working.
I know. You know what, Eric?
What?
I can't argue that point. I just think you are absolutely right. MGM, the biggest, most famous film company in the world, didn't move with the times, and that's what's happened to them.
Talking of not moving with the times, with Cordial Endantale, or whatever they call it, Mark, we've got the great story to drop you right in it from Boris Johnson, none other, who's done what I can only describe as a Prince Philip gaffe.
Well, I tell you, I mean, I really don't really know if it's a gaffe. I mean, I suppose that the French won't be pleased. But anyway, he was addressing a conference.
Oh, by the way, everybody, Mark lives in France, Paris. Paris, France, right?
Yeah, okay. He lives in France, in Paris, yeah.
Boris Johnson was comparing the new bicycle hire scheme, the public bicycle hire scheme, which has been recently introduced in London, with the similar scheme called Vélib. Which has been going in Paris for a number of years, and because he was trumpeting it, and I have to say, it seems to me a pretty good achievement. But one of the things he came up with was apparently in the first 5 weeks or 6 weeks or something or other of the scheme, only three bikes in London had been stolen. Which, considering that there are many, many thousands of them, I suppose that's pretty good.
Yep.
And he contrasted that with the French scheme, where apparently 500 bikes were nicked in the same comparative period. And he then went on to praise Londoners for not being the same as, and those are Boris's words, light-fingered Parisians. and maybe that's the gaffe for saying there's a lot of light-fingered Parisians. And, you know, maybe that's unfair to Parisians. But what I was very pleased to see was that he then went on to talk about what he thought was a responsible attitude amongst Londoners and about how they had a sort of a community spirit amongst them. And I must say, I think that's true. And I particularly think that it's not true of Paris. And I think that that's partly what Boris was getting at. I think the Parisians are well known within Paris and in France generally and in the world generally as not being particularly enthusiastic about living in any kind of society, as far as I can.
Well, actually, I'm going to drag Lee back into this side of it because he experienced this last year, and we did some. Sorry, Mark. We did some television programs over here with Lee, and we put them on the internet. And would you like to share what happened an hour after they went up?
Well, no, it was quite funny, really, wasn't it?
Yes.
I was sitting in Poprad, which is, to me, Poprad is my spiritual home. The only thing that spoils it is the fact that Eric lives there.
Boom.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, and I was just sitting there, I was having a beer, so it was a beautiful day, sitting down at a bar at a table, and all of a sudden, there were two really attractive young ladies walking across the square, and one of them stopped and looked at me. I thought they must be looking at somebody behind me, but they weren't. And then they did a little wave at me, little wave like that. And it was because they'd already seen it. It had been done an hour.
Well, didn't they say something to you as well?
I can't remember. You'll have to fill that bit in.
Oh, Gould and Perry. Get the punchline out, Banksy. Oh, thank you. Stop going away from your microphone.
I just want to say something about Boris Johnson before we move on, if I may.
Quick.
Yeah, no, it's very simple. What Boris was saying, the only time I've been robbed was in Paris. And it wasn't me, it was Andrea who got robbed. Well, she got steamed at the market in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what they nicked?
No.
A flip-flops.
Oh, my word.
They must have had to lift her up to get those.
Now they're in a bag, but Boris Johnson's only continued the great old British tradition of saying things that you shouldn't do. The tradition was started by Prince Philip. It's like, have you heard the one that David Cameron came out with?
No, we can't do that in part one. We'll have to do it in part two. Remind Lee of the finishing punchline to his story, because apparently one of the girls said to him, "Thank you for being so nice about my country."
That's not a punchline.
No, that's
just not funny.
We'll be back in part two of Postcard from Poprad, boys and girls. Faster than you can make a crepe, Suzette.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.